What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the What's Goody podcast. I have a really special guest. This is probably the coolest guest I've ever had on my podcast. We are going to talk to James Sweet Feet White. What's going on, dude?
Not much. How are you?
Good, man. Good. And for those of you who don't know James, James White, obviously Super Bowl 51 winner, should have been MVP. I think everybody and their mom knows that. But yeah, man, I just want to dive into it. Like, I'm sure everybody wants to know. I'm sure you've got asked this 1,000 times, but how did it feel scoring the game winning touchdown for the Super Bowl in overtime? Not to mention coming back from the biggest comeback like in Super Bowl history, like insane. How did that feel?
For me, I always say, like, it's a strange way to put it, but I felt like I blacked out in a sense. I felt like it was just me, my teammates. There was no fans. Like, I didn't hear anybody screaming, cheering, anything. I was just running across the end zone to I don't know where. I was running away from our team sideline after I scored, and then LeGarrette Blount came, tackled me, and I just stretched out in the end zone. It was just like a surreal feeling. Honestly, it still feels fake to be if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, man, it's got to be like. It's like one of those things, like, you know, when you're a kid, I know I did this, like, when I was a kid, or even playing Madden, like, you dream about that moment, right? You dream about, all right, final seconds on the clock, this is it, do or die, and you're the one that's going to score and win the game, bring home the victory. It's like everyone dreams of that as a child, but only a few people in this world will ever experience that. And you're one of them, dude. It's like, it's crazy.
That's why I say it still honestly feels so fake. And like every player, you know, who's ever played any sport, you, whether it's in the yard or with your friends, you pretend like it's the last second on the shot clock, or it's a 1 second on the clock in the end of a football game, or a shootout or something in a soccer or a hockey game, whatever it may be. In those clutch moments, you picture yourself making that play. And like, I know that I did it, but it still honestly doesn't feel surreal in my mind. Like, I still haven't watched the game completely through. Like, myself, I've seen, like, you know, parts of it.
Yeah.
I haven't really sat down and watched it in its entirety, but it was a fun feeling. You put in all the work, you know, throughout, you know, your childhood, high school, you know, college, NFL, to try and get to those moments. Not everybody gets that opportunity. So for me, that was my first opportunity getting to play in the Super Bowl. My rookie year, we made it there. I was inactive, aside from 3 games the entire season. So I got to see what it took. I saw, you know, the work that everybody put in. Unfortunately, like, it didn't require me to do much work aside from, you know, help the guys get prepared on a day-to-day basis. But I saw, and I knew, like, if I ever got my opportunity to play in that game, I wanted to leave my imprint on it. The first half, I was like, man, like, we're about to get our, you know, our tails whooped. I was like, this is going to be how we go out in my first Super Bowl. But we found our way back into it, and the rest was history.
Yeah, what was that feeling in the locker room? I mean, again, like, I know you've answered this question hundreds of times, but is it quiet? Are people amped up? Like, what's that feeling walking back to the locker room? And, like, how does it work? Because I'm number one, just FYI, I'm a huge NFL fan. Like, I fucking love the NFL. And so any, like, insight of, like, what's it like? Do you guys go talk to your individual coaches? Like, how do you guys just sit in your locker? Like, what do you do when you come back from halftime?
Halftime's fairly quick in the NFL. College, I feel like it's like 20 minutes or so. NFL feels like almost 5 to 10 minutes. Like, when you're in your locker room, you go use a bathroom, maybe grab some pickles or something to eat, or a PB&J. You sit down, your coach says a few words, and you're back out. So the halftime wasn't really too much different than any normal halftime. I know the Super Bowl halftime's a little bit longer because of, you know, the halftime shows and all that's a little bit extended. So you sit a little bit longer than you normally would. But there wasn't any crazy speeches going on. You know, Bill said his pieces. It's just pretty much, we simply got to play better. I know that's like cliche, but, you know, we were helping them win the football game. There's a lot of errors on our side of things. And if we just clean those up, you know, maybe we would find our way back into it. I know Daron Harmon and, like, Julian Edelman, those guys were just like, this is going to be, like, the greatest story ever told. And, you know, as you're sitting there at that point, you're like, yeah, man, like, whatever. Like, you know, I know we're trying to get us, like, motivated to get back out there and give it. We're getting our ass kicked right now, you know what I mean? Not to say that we were going to go out and not compete and finish, you know, what we had done all season to get to this moment. So we just cleaned things up. They gave us some help, you know, plenty of it. They had to make their errors, but we had to capitalize on it.
Yeah. Well, I want to start from the beginning. So growing up, did like you play football all your life? Was this something that you always had a passion for? Or were there any other sports that you thought that maybe you could have a professional shot in?
For me, I played football all my life, watching, you know, my dad played in college at FAMU. My brother, 3 years older than me, he played. So just seeing, you know, them either, you know, work out in the yard or whatever, just wanted to emulate them. I always played the game, but I also always played basketball and baseball, you know, all throughout, you know, middle school, high school. I didn't play basketball. I didn't make the basketball team. I was never really that good at basketball. When I was younger, I was bigger than everybody else. And unfortunately, I stopped growing in like the eighth grade. So that cut off that. I wasn't bigger than anybody anymore. I was only, you know, 5'8", 5'9". So I didn't really stand much of a chance at that point. But I played baseball, you know, all throughout high school. I had like one showcase with the Seattle Mariners like one time. That was like my only little glimpse of possibly, you know, trying to make it to the MLB. But yeah, I don't think I necessarily, you know, put as much effort into baseball once I got into high school. Maybe if I did, I would probably had the potential of getting drafted like really late in the MLB drafts. And there's so many, you know, rounds. A lot of guys get drafted, but it's so hard to make it, you know, once you actually do.
Baseball
in the MLB.
Yeah, baseball is one of those weird, like, you don't become a star until you're like 30. You know, because you're like in the triple A's, then you're in the double A's, and then you finally get moved up to the show. And by the time you know it, like Aaron Judge, you know, I mean, he's a star, but you look how old he is. You're like, well, where was he in his 20s? Like, he's working his way up, man. Yeah, he's in the minor leagues. And it's wild because that's not, I guess you can consider the college football landscape as being the minors, I guess. But still, like, if you're good, it's only 3 years. I mean, it's not really that long. And you're starting to see, you know, you see, like, what was it? Micah Parsons, I think he set out his junior year at Penn State because he was like, look, I showed you everything my freshman year, my sophomore year. Like, I ain't risking getting hurt my junior year. You're going to draft me. You know I'm good. You see my tape. But, no, it's one of those things. Like, so in high school, did you know, like, when did you know, like, oh, shit, like, I'm really good? How many, like, were there a lot of college teams reaching out to you? Like, did you think, like, wow, like, I'm really going to, this may happen. I may go to the NFL.
For me, I was fortunate enough. I went to a high school in South Florida called St. Thomas Aquinas. We were one of the, you know, best high schools as far as football across the nation for, you know, several years. So getting to compete against some of the top talent just in practice alone, you're going to be, you know, a lot better of a player just from that. So competing against those guys, I knew I'd have a good opportunity to play, you know, at the college level. I had about, I think, like 12 to 15 offers or so, you know, coming out of high school, ended up going to Wisconsin. But even in high school, I didn't know necessarily, you know, I was going to have an opportunity to play in the league. I know we all think that when we're playing that, you know, I play football, we're all going to get a chance. But that's not, it's like a 1% chance that you actually get to step foot in the NFL. But I'll say after my freshman year of college, I won the Big Ten Freshman of the Year. Then I was like, okay, like if I'm doing this at this level and I made Big Ten Freshman of the Year, then if I keep working and keep getting better, then potentially I have a chance to make it to the NFL.
Yeah, so how, you know, you came from, you said South Florida, right?
Yeah.
Going to Wisconsin. How much of, like, a culture shock was that?
Yeah, it was completely different than South Florida, but I know myself, I wanted to get out of South Florida. I wanted to, you know, go somewhere different, wanted to, you know, kind of grow up, get away from, you know, my parents, get up from underneath their wing. I was fortunate enough, my family, you know, they had enough, you know, of an income to be able to get to my games and all that. So that wasn't necessarily a factor for me going far away from home. So that didn't, you know, hinder me from going too far. So that's why I went there, knew they were going to run the football. It's a great academic school, just a great college town. You know, my first time actually going on a visit there was like during the off season. I wasn't really sold on it. So I took my official visit later in the fall and like actually getting that experience with everybody on campus, going to the games. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is the place where I could really see myself, you know, fitting in and doing my 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those college towns, and they're known for their football. They're known for their crazy fans. I've never gone. Obviously, you probably know this. My business partner, Matt Payne, who is the founder of BioCoach, is obviously a Wisconsin grad. So he's a big-time Badgers fan. And, so it's, I always like to give him shit about that. But, no, it's cool. It's he talks about his college days, and it just sounds like, man, it's a blast. I'm sure you had tons of fun there.
It's a good time. A lot of wild people, especially during the college days.
Tell me about the draft experience. How was that? Like, you know, the days leading up and then the day of the draft, like how was that?
It's unique for sure. I know myself, I had no inclination of when, you know, I was going to get drafted. You know, some guys have, you go to the combine. I didn't really meet with any teams formally at the combine. A lot of guys are meet with the five, six, seven different teams, getting, you know, put up on the board, sitting there with the GM, you know, owner, head coaches in a room. They're trying to figure out things about you. My combine experience was extremely chill. I did my performances. I did the test that I had to do, and I just went back to my room and did like my normal routine. So it wasn't too much stress on me when draft day, you know, the first round came around. I obviously knew I wasn't getting picked then, so I just watched the most of it, you know, with my family, my close family, and then I ended up like going out with my friends like later on, like after like pick 20. I saw like some of my people I trained with or people that I knew get drafted, and I ended up, you know, going out having some fun with some friends. And the next day, I ended up having a party, because when I had the only, you know, pre-draft visit I had was with the New England Patriots, and talking with the running back coach, he's like, so I could see you. He told me, like, I could see you getting drafted in, like, the second round or third round. So I was like, okay, like, maybe there's an opportunity there. So I ended up having, like, a big party, like, at my house with some friends and family, you know, watching guys get picked, watching other running backs get picked. And it's definitely, I was not, like, a jealous feeling. It's just, like, I don't know how to describe it. Anybody who's really sat, you know, on draft day and you see other guys at your position getting drafted, you're like, man, like, that should be me. I feel like I'm better than this guy. I feel like I should have that opportunity. But that's, look, you can't control what you can't control. So end up having that party, then getting drafted on that second night. Then on the third day, I ended up getting drafted like the back end of the fourth round. So I didn't have to wait too long on the third day. But it was a surreal feeling getting that call, getting to talk to Mr. Kraft, Coach Belichick, you know, getting the jitter some about finally getting that opportunity to play in the league. But it's definitely a dream come true.
I mean, out of all the teams, I know you did your pre-draft practice or workout with them, but did you ever, out of all the teams, like the Patriots, because they were the Patriots when you got drafted, they were the team. They've been that team since the early 2000s, since Brady. So it's kind of like, I look at the Patriots, like, you know, they were like the Spurs back in the day, like, you know, with a coach like Pop, you know, they're just a well run organization. So did you ever imagine that you were going to play there? Like, are there any other teams that you were like, I had a feeling they might pick me, or was it always Patriots?
For me, the only pre-draft visit I had was with the Patriots, and it went extremely well. So I had, you know, some kind of inclination that that was a possibility. And if not, my running back coach from college, from my sophomore, junior, and senior year, he ended up getting a job with the Ravens this, like, my rookie year, like, going into the draft. So he had just got the job there, and he was vouching for me to go to the Ravens, and they had, like, they were like two or three picks after I got picked. He said, like, he was really vouching for me to get picked at that point. So those are the only two teams I could kind of guess I had the potential of going to. Which wouldn't have been bad. They're a very good football team.
Y'all both were. The Patriots and the Ravens are still good to this day. Yeah,
would have been a win-win situation.
So tell me a little bit about the Patriots way and the culture. Like, when you get there, what is that like, and how does that translate to what you do on a day in, day out basis? And kind of, does that still linger to this day, the Patriots way?
For sure. I think the Patriot way is just about hard work, accountability, and just putting the team first. So when, as soon as you step into the building, you see, you know, everybody's held accountable, from Tom Brady, Julian Edelman, you know, Devin McCourty, you know, Rob Gronkowski. Everybody's held accountable and at a high standard. And when you see, you know, you're during OTAs and Tom Brady's getting, you know, called out in the team meeting about the mistakes that he's made, and you know you're going to get called out for when you mess up, like, as a rookie and all that. But that just means that Coach Belichick is trying to push you, and he sees something in you that he knows that you can perform better than what you're doing. So he's trying to unlock all that potential and limit the mistakes that you're making. And just the hard work. It's just, you know, nobody's going to get all the credit. You know, nobody's going to get, you know, all the blame. It's a team football game. So I think you learn that extremely quickly. Everybody has a role in the team. Somebody's role is going to be greater than others, but if you maximize what you're doing extremely well, I mean, it's going to be tough. Not always going to be happy, not always going to be satisfied all the time, but if you understand, you know, the end goal and the end result, then I think you'll be fine and you'll survive. Not everybody does survive, you know, within that type of, you know, environment. And that's why, you know, you see some guys that, you know, have success somewhere else, come to the Patriots, maybe not has some success there, because it doesn't fit everybody, but it definitely works for sure.
Yeah. So you're a rookie, you're going into the Patriots organization. You hear the stories about like rookies. So like, how long did it take you before you could finally like talk to the vets, like Gronk, and talk to Tom and things like that? And did they make you do anything? Like,
For myself, I'm a pretty reserved person, to begin with. So I wasn't necessarily talking to anybody, honestly, aside from maybe, guys in my running back room, the guys who I'm with, more often than not. I pretty much kept to myself. The veteran running backs that are there, Brandon Bolden, Shane Vereen, Stephen Ridley, the guys, that were there in my rookie season, they took me up under their wing, whether it was just on the weekends, just going over to their house grilling, or, going out having some fun or something. Like those first few weeks there during OTAs, just so you get acclimated. I never had to do anything crazy. For me, it was just, I'll have to get food for the veterans, for the bus rides to the airport when we're going to the away game. So it was nothing simple, just something, nothing crazy, just something simple, which, every rookie should have to do.
Everybody.
Yeah, pay your dues.
That's in college, that's in high school. Like, it's everywhere. Like, that's
carry the pads, post practice.
Yeah, you gotta pay your dues.
Yeah, just pay your dues, that type of thing. So it wasn't anything crazy, but I stayed to myself for the most part. I didn't really necessarily, talk to, Tom or Julian, go out my way to talk to them. If we're on the field, if we're on the field, like that type of thing. If I need to ask a question or what I need to do better, that type of thing, yeah. But other than that, I stuck to myself.
Yeah. How was game day routine, game day rituals? Give me a walkthrough. How was that leading up to game day, and what are the things you got to do in your kind of routine?
For me, Monday is really the start of the week. You're coming off the last week's game. You watch the film from that, and you start to dive into your next opponent a little bit. Start getting some early film of them. Watch their game from the previous week. And on Tuesday's your day off. You probably go in, get a lift, do some prehab. Everybody's routine's a little bit different. Some guys go in, some guys stay completely away, from the facility. Just depending on the week for me. Sometimes I stay completely away, do my studying there. Sometimes, I go in, do a lift, whatever it may be that suits me that week. The Wednesday, you really start to dive into the team, work on first, second down, get the game plan, the basis of the game plan on early downs, first and second down. Then really on my day was Thursday. Thursday was third downs. That was my big role on our team. That's when I really played the most. That's when I got most of my reps and practices on Thursday. So, working on routes, seeing how they play coverages on third down, see what their blitz packages are like on third down, so I can go execute at a high level. And another busy day for me was Friday too, as we worked on red zone. I was a big part of that, just scheme plays, different ways I could fit in to execute and try and score touchdowns when we get inside the 20-yard line, working on 2-minute in-the-game situations. And Saturday's just a walkthrough. You just sharpen up on everything. Just make sure you're on your P's and Q's, all the plays that are available and everything like that, and get your rest. Then when Sunday rolls around, and it's just on you. You did all the preparation, throughout the week. You trust in what the coaches are doing. You trust in what you've done all week long, and you just kind of play free. And if it was a 1 o'clock game for me, I'd probably wake up around 6:30, 7 or so, at the hotel. If it was a
early for a 1 o'clock game. That's pretty early
for home. It's a strange routine, but we'd be at the hotel. We stay at the hotel the night before the game. I wake up probably 6:30, 7. Yeah. You got to check in at breakfast there at the hotel. Then I would go home. I go back to sleep at home in my own bed.
Well, that's funny because people always think that when you have home games, you get to sleep in your own bed. And it's like, no, you're not.
Nah.
You're sleeping in a hotel.
Maybe some other teams. I don't know.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Maybe some other, at least with the Patriots, then you slept at a hotel.
You slept at a hotel. Right. So for me, I probably get up at 6 or 7 or so and go to my house, and I go to sleep there for whatever, another hour, hour and a half or so. Then I get up, get to the stadium, 3 hours before the game, or 3.5 hours, however. I don't remember the exact time. And then you start to lock in there. Everybody's routine is a little bit different. Just listen to some music. Go out pregame, get to the field, move around a little bit, make sure your footing's right, make sure you're feeling good, feeling loose. And then when you go out with the team, it's just have fun.
Yeah, man. How fun were games? That feeling, that crowd. How fun was that?
I mean, that's what you live for right there. The practices can be tough, can be a little annoying at times, constantly just doing the same things over and over feels very repetitive. But when the games roll around, it's just competition. You're going up against the best talent in the entire world when it comes to football. So you want to put your best foot forward, and you really want to go out there and shine. And it's nothing like going, you know, it's not real war, but just going to war with, you know, your teammates. You, I said, you grinded all offseason training camp to get to these points, and now you're finally a true team, and you really go out there and show how good you are.
Who was the hardest hitter? Like, who laid the hardest hit of your career?
Hardest hit.
Who was it?
I got hit pretty good by a guy named Darian Stewart from the Denver Broncos in the AFC Championship my second season. Tom threw a slant to me. It was on a third down play. Caught it, but he leveled me. It didn't hurt. I mean, a lot of times the hits that look really bad don't necessarily, like, hurt. But, I mean, they took me out, like, after that play just because I got up a little slow. But it didn't necessarily hurt. Just surprised me.
Yeah. Those going down the middle plays, wow. So what was it like playing with Tom Brady? Like, I mean, obviously at the time, he's considered one of the best. But maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But he may have not been the GOAT just yet. But now, everybody knows, hand down, he's the GOAT. I mean, what was it like playing with him?
I mean, it was awesome just to, you know, walk in as a 22, 23-year-old rookie, and he's probably already close to, 38, 37. I don't know how old he was when I first got there. But just to see a guy who's already won Super Bowls, already had so much success, still putting in the work like he was a rookie, like he was unproven. And for a young guy like myself coming into that, like this guy is this old. He's acting like he hasn't won anything. Like, how can I not show up to work and, you know, put my best foot forward and, you know, try not to go out and help that guy, you know, go out and have a ton of success. Then equate to that, you know, in my rookie year as far as helping the team win, didn't get my opportunity at that point. But you wanted to emulate a guy like that to see, you know, the hard work he put in, you know, whether it was in the film room, taking care of his body, you know, whatever it was, his nutrition, all that. You wanted to, you know, try and do some things, whatever you could to mimic him, to go out there and have, you know, some of the success that he had.
Yeah. You always hear that Gronk was like the party animal. Like, I mean, I hate to sound rude, but like you saw, I don't know if you saw the roast or not, but you know how they portrayed Gronk. He's like a dumb caveman. How much was he like that in the locker room? Is he just a wild guy? Just says what he's thinking. And
it would just depend on the day. Honestly, for the most part, he's really reserved. He's pretty chill. Okay. I mean, maybe when he first got there, I'm sure like early on the first few years, I'm sure he was a little bit wilder. By the time I got there, I think he was in year six or so, year five or six. I'm not sure, but he was already, you know, a vet. So like he would have his moments where he'd act goofy, act silly, either on the field, you know, in walkthroughs or in the meeting rooms and be goofy, which he's hilarious when he does get in that mode. But I will say, like on a day-to-day basis, he was pretty reserved. He's a cool dude. He's a great guy, man. He's a big dude. He is goofy. He gets a bad rap. I thought he got it worse than Tom, you know, during the roast. Everybody was calling him stupid when they got up on the mic. So I thought they gave him a harsh time.
I think they did too. I think a lot of them were like, whoa, I thought this was Tom Brady roast. Like, dude, Gronk was catching spare bullets left and right. I was feeling bad. I was like, man, y'all gotta leave him alone. Like, they were going at him pretty rough. But no, that, you know, the roast, speaking of the roast, I thought it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I think he handled it really, really well. I mean, they got into some
dark humor. It was some dark humor.
It was some dark hair. But you know what? Like, I think as a society, we needed that. Like, we really, like, everybody's so uptight. Everybody is so left or right, and it's polarizing and don't want to hurt your feelings. Like, but that's what comedy was always good at, right? It was always good at laughing at those things and taking a step back and be like, guys, at the end of the day, like,
it's just a joke.
It's not that serious. It's just a joke. Like, lighten up. And they did a really good job. Yeah. They did a really good job. I thought it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
I enjoyed it. Like, I thought it was old school comedy, like you said. It was, you know, back in the day, you could say, you know, pretty much, you know, whatever, and people would enjoy it. People would laugh. You know, now, you know, things are a little bit different. People, you know, try and, you know, break things down and see, you know, this guy's really serious. He's really, you know, trying to poke fun at this. He really means what he's saying. But look, lot of times these comedians make fun of themselves just as much as they make fun of, you know, anybody else. But yeah, it was cool to see some of that old school comedy come back. And I know it's not made for everybody. I understand that. Yeah. So I can see how some people can take it the way, you know, the wrong way and all that. But if you truly enjoy comedy, you've watched comedy for a long time, I think everybody would enjoy that.
And I think that's like, it's supposed to not, it's not supposed to be for everybody. Yeah. Like, you know, like there's 8 billion people in this world. Not everybody is going to enjoy it. And that's fine. Like, it's okay. Like, but you don't cancel somebody over it because they hurt your feelings. Like, or they said a joke I didn't like. Like, it's comedy. It's a joke. And at the end of the day, it's what we needed. And overall, like, kudos to that, the whole organization and whoever put that on Netflix did an amazing job. All the comedians, the Patriots, like even Bill Belichick getting up there. And like, like, did you ever imagine Bill Belichick would ever do something like that?
Not if he was coaching. No. Since he's retired. No. Yes. I can see that. He's hilarious, man. And he knows it.
He's fun. Like, so like just being around, like he's a funny dude.
Funny dude in the team meetings and everything. Like he'd get after you like in the meeting. Then like as soon as you're walking out,
he'll roast you. He'll roast you during.
I just got your ass in like that type of thing. So he has his jokes, you know, whether it's practice, whether it's in the film room, you know, he is serious, but he does, you know, have some satire to him, you know?
You could see it too. You could see it. I could see him just roasting people. Cause you've seen him like on the NFL. I don't even know what the documentaries are called, but you see, like he would roast it. I think Edelman, NFL like his film, rookie year. he roasted him his rookie year. But no, it's good to see him like a different side of him, and you're starting to see a lot of people do that after they retire or maybe they're looking for a new job.
Yeah,
because people need to see, like, you know, the perception that Bill always gave during his press conference is like, let's be real, like he kind of came off like an asshole. Everybody knew that's not truly him, but
he knows that.
You know, like you know, like you go in the you it was like every after the game, you know, he just like you didn't even want to ask him a question. He would just make you sound stupid. He
scored 7 points.
Try to win the game. Bill, what went wrong? We didn't score enough points. So it's the deep, like, yeah, just but it's good to see that. And like you see that with Nick Saban now. Like he just is on the Pat Mac. He's going to be on the Pat McAfee show like once a week now. Like, and Bill Belichick, I think, wants to do that as well. And it's like that way to like kind of stay relevant, kind of stay in the industry, stay in the business. Cause, you know, with big names like that, Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, shit, they can go and start their own podcast.
And they would do numbers.
Or start their own little
thing. Whatever.
You know, Monday Night Football or Saturday college football. Like, and they would kill. Because those two guys are iconic, right? It's the same thing for Brady. Like, you know, he's going to be on Fox this year. And it's like, you know, he's going to kill it. He's got the insight. He's got that whatever you want to call it. He's got
it. I think it gives everybody a little bit of an inside look of, you know, how these guys think, you know, on and off the field. You know, you hear stories about them. Yep. You hear, you know, all these different things. But now you actually hear them, you know, outside of, you know, being a part, you know, of a team. You get to hear a little bit, I wouldn't say like unfiltered, like they're going to talk crazy, but you get to hear, you know, them actually talk about the game of football. I think it's going to be great because not everybody gets to know what's going on in Tom Brady's head and Bill Belichick's head when it comes to football. And I'm excited to listen to it myself. I'm pretty sure Bill's going to be on Peyton Manning's Manning Cast like every Monday night at some point. You know, to talk.
Oh, yeah,
to
nice. Talk over. That'll be fun. The Mannings are fucking funny, dude.
Hilarious, man.
Those two guys are hilarious. Those two guys are so funny. Because
there's a lot of mutual respect there between Bill and Peyton Manning. Obviously, a lot of great battles, you know, throughout regular season games, playoff games. They went toe-to-toe. So it's going to be fun to hear those guys really break down the game.
Yeah, when you played with the Patriots, what was your biggest rival? Who was your biggest rival? I know, like, different teams have their biggest rival, but for you as a player, like, who was your one team where like, fuck, I hate those guys? Not literally hate them, but you know, like, I do not want to lose these guys.
I think it would just depend on the year. I know we had a lot of great battles with the Steelers, whether it was home or away. We definitely went toe-to-toe with them a lot. And then the Chiefs as well, whether it was Alex Smith when he was there playing or when Patrick Mahomes took over, we had, you know, some epic battles battling them. And then towards the No, the end of my career is probably Buffalo. They started to get good. We started to taper off a little bit. So, you know, they started, you know, start smelling themselves, that type of thing. So, yes, it definitely started to become a good beef with Buffalo towards the end of my career.
Well, what about Miami?
Miami,
too. You guys couldn't win down there, man.
Could never get right. They would set us up either, you know, week one, we'd be playing in the 100-degree weather, or, you know, come January when we're playing in the practicing in the cold, we got to go down there and it's, you know, 85 degrees. So they would set us up, but no, they, you know, Miami always kind of had our number, especially, you know, on their home turf. They always found a way, no matter what their record was.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I've always wondered about, you know, the NFL, and I talked to a couple of guys and a couple of coaches that you know, work with BioCoach, and it's the nutrition. I know some teams feed you guys throughout the day and whatnot, but when I look at the food, it's not always the best, right? And so I've always wondered, like, do you see, like, some players choose other options? They're like, yeah, that's probably not the best. I probably shouldn't be eating that. I mean, that's good for the linemen. The linemen want to eat that. The defensive ends want to eat that. That's fine. They got to stay big. But for me, like, I got to stay in shape because I'm going to have my own chef cook me stuff. Like, tell me about the nutrition and the NFL, and is it up to date? Do they try to stay away from, like, seed oils and crappy processed foods, or is it just like, yeah, there's Gatorades everywhere, it's kind of cafeteria stuff?
It depends, you know, on the organization. I think with the Patriots, we did a fairly decent job of trying to, you know, keep things, you know, fairly clean as possible. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, the coaches, they, you know, they eat differently than the players, so you're satisfying, you know, many different, the coaches are in there more than the players are, so you're satisfying a lot of different people. There's a ton of great options. There's going to be some, you know, some unhealthy stuff, and then there's going to be some healthier options. Fruits and vegetables are always, you know, available. There's always a salad bar available. But it just depends on the day. But I will say, like, as the years went on, they did a great job, especially after COVID. Like, you can, like, go on an app and you can place, like, you know, orders where they whip, you know, whip it together. You place your order in about 10 to 15 minutes. They can whip up an order, you know, really cater to you, whatever it may be, whether it's a, you know, poke bowl or, you know, some salmon or whatever it may be. That it's gotten really good as far as when it comes to the Patriots. But I've heard some teams, like, one of my friends played for the Arizona Cardinals. He said, like, they had to, like, pay for their meals. Like, they would take it out your paycheck. You know,
oh,
like,
man.
You know, they're watching who's walking out there with a to-go box out the room where you got to place your order, whatever, throughout the week. You got to jot it down on a piece of paper. So, you know, it really depends on the team, and it depends on the person, too. I know some guys obviously have their own chefs, whether it's at home or you got people, you know, catering meals. I know for myself, it was, you know, I teeter on the line. Sometimes, you know, I'm eating really good, and sometimes, you know, I'm with the lineman. I mean, some crazy things as well. So it's some give and take when it comes to it. But I definitely will say, you know, with the Patriots, we had a nutritionist and Ted Harper, who's still there currently. You know, he does a great job. He sits down with, you know, every single person. He'll, you know, they do blood work, all types of things to see where you're.
Oh, that's awesome.
See where you're.
That's great. They're probably checking A1C, glucose.
Checking everything.
Yeah. So blood pressure.
You're very aware of, you know, your deficiencies. So they do a great job of that. And it's, you know, it's up to you whether you actually want to, you know, go out there and take it to the next level as far as, you know, trying to make your nutrition and your health a little bit better.
Yeah. I've always wondered that because I think what people don't understand is, like, just changing up your diet, like, how much would that correlate to a difference on the field? Yep. And like you said, for coaches, right? Let's be real. You know, like, a lot of them do come from being former players, right? And you can't eat like that. And like I said, BioCoach coaches a couple of coaches in the NFL, and their hours are absolutely insane. I mean, they live there. They literally live there at the facility. And they're always eating, and they're always at their desk. And it's like, man, you can't be doing that. I got to get you moving. You can't be eating this stuff. And it's like, man, I wonder if we had the whole coaching staff on a clean whole foods, no seed oils, you know, keeping your glucose levels stable, you're going to have more energy. You're going to be more focused. You're going to be able to concentrate on the game plan. You're not going to be constantly wanting to snack. Could that translate to more wins on the field? You never know, but it's one of those things, right? Because, you know, I talked to a lot of coaches, and they're like, oh, dude, like, you know, tell me, like, man, Logan, I'm tired, bro. Like, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, I just want to take a nap. I got to go to the break room, grab a Snickers bar, grab a bag of Cheetos. And it's like, yeah. And it's like, dude, that's not normal. You don't have to feel that way. If you just switch up your food, switch up your diet, tweak some things, you would feel like a completely different person. And that probably could translate to the field. It's just this one crazy idea I've always had in my head. And I hope one day to pursue it to where like we just coach a whole entire NFL coaching staff and get them on a bio coach plan on eating, tracking their biomarkers, tracking their sleep, and making sure everything's on point. And what if that year they go Super Bowl?
Yeah, everybody be doing it. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Look, we both know it's a monkey see, monkeys do league. You know, Wildcats, a copycat league. If someone says over there, they do it over there. They're gonna want to copy them, and so it's all it takes is one, right? They one of their rival teams. What are they doing over there?
I mean,
bio coach or.
You the know, potential is there. You got to get connected. You got to get connected with the right person. Yeah,
obviously. It's one of those. It's one of those pipe dream. But I have a passion for the NFL. So, unfortunately, I would charge the Patriots, but I wouldn't charge my Cowboys.
Are you a Cowboys fan? Huh? Yeah, America's team.
Jerry Jones, if you're listening to this, let me coach your staff. Hey, the head coach, come on, McCarthy, man. You need it. I'm not saying anything, but I could probably guess you need some of our help, and we need the wins. Yeah.
Sure, it's a big year for them.
It is. It's a big year. I don't even want to talk about it. Talk about coaching staffs and organizations not doing it the right way.
it's very different over there. I mean, Jerry plays a huge part in that.
I don't know if he cares about winning or if he just cares about people talking about the Cowboys and Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, like, as long as, you know, that money's coming in within those organizations, some of them don't necessarily care about, you know, winning championships. As long as they're in the green at the end of the season.
And you know they are. They're in the green.
Regardless.
But it's kind of bad when, you know, that city has the Rangers who just won. Yeah. You have the Mavericks in the finals. You have the hockey team who just got knocked out of the Western Conference Finals. And then you got the Cowboys that haven't been since 95. It's just like,
it's their time, man.
Breaks my heart. Breaks my heart. All right. Yeah. So a couple of last minute questions. Life after football. How was that transition?
I'm still transitioning, honestly, just trying to, you know, find a routine, find something that, you know, keeps me busy. You know, when it comes to football, it's a very regiment, you know, routine. You're very structured, I should say. Monday means this, Tuesday means this, you know, February means this, you know, January means that. Every month and day, you know, means something specific. And then, you know, once that's, you know, not there, it's like, you gotta figure your shit out. Then I'm honestly still trying to figure it out, trying to find things to keep me busy, find a routine of my own. Been trying to get into sports broadcast, and I work with Big Ten Network on TV this past season, which I really enjoyed. I've been doing Sirius XM, you know, every Wednesday morning over the last two seasons. I obviously started my own podcast as well, the Money Down Podcast, which you know about, with two of my best friends, two of my college teammates that we talk, you know, every single day about, you know, life, everything, football, sports. We just really enjoy got some cool guests on there. We have some fun, still trying to grow our following. So excited to see where that goes. But I'm still, you know, obviously trying to fill my plate. You know, nothing has necessarily, you know, satisfied or filled that void of, you know, what football. Not that I want to go out there and play football still. I miss my teammates. I miss like the games and all that. But I definitely don't miss the practices and having the
training. Your body probably feels a little bit better. Waking up in the morning, yeah, right?
Definitely feels better. So yeah, I'm doing fine, but I'm still trying to, you know, I'm still kind of figuring things out for sure. Yeah. But
that's and you know what? In the day and age that we live in, like with technology, it's like there's no excuse. Yeah. You can do anything. Like you can do anything with what we have today, right? And podcasts, you see, is the new media. Yep. It really is. Nobody's watching the news anymore. Nobody's going to Fox or CNN or MSNBC. And whatever the other one is called, they're going to podcasts. Yep. They're going to long form conversations because that's the only way you can really understand a story and really deep dive into something. You can't talk about a topic for 3 minutes. Oh, commercial break, guys. We got to go to commercial. All right, we're back. Another 3 minutes. Rapid fire. All right, commercial break. That's just not the way people want to hear things or learn about things. So podcast is definitely, yeah, I love that. And broadcasting too, right? One other kind of funny question I want to ask. So did you ever play fantasy football when you played football?
When I played, no. But my first...
Were y'all not allowed to?
You're just not allowed to put money in on it. You can play.
Yeah, okay, okay.
Okay. Straight play.
I was wondering, like, did you draft yourself? If you played?
If I was playing, I most definitely, you know, would have drafted myself 100%. And I would have sat myself depending on the week, you know, depending on the game plan and all that. But I know some players have played it that were on my team. I know it's a huge thing, obviously, you know. I think it's kind of cool. I mean, it's annoying when the fans, you know, kind of get after you if you don't perform well and all that. That's just the nature of it. They're going to do that, whether it's fantasy football, you know, or not. But it brings in, you know, a different crowd. You know, there's some people that play fantasy football. You know, they may not necessarily want to watch a football game, but they may watch it just to see if the player on their team goes out and performs. So I can see, you know, why that is a thing. And I played my first year retired, but I decided not to ever play it again because it made me watch the game so much different. I was like rooting on people's downfalls to, you know, because I was going against them in fantasy. Like, I need to throw a pick right here, da 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 da. So I'm like, yeah, I can't necessarily watch the game like that.
Yeah, yeah. Especially like, yeah, if you're like, if one of your teammates, like if they have Tom Brady, and you're like, damn, I'm going to the playoffs in my fantasy football league, but they got Tom Brady. I hope I lose. Please let me lose. That means Tom Brady did good. No, what's crazy is like, you see how big sports gambling is. DraftKings, Prize Picks, like whatever.
Yeah. There's all the different forms of it.
It's crazy how big it's getting, and now the leagues are accepting it, right? But it's like they're walking this fine line of taking it on as an, you know, an advertiser, but, you know, players, absolutely no tolerance. It's kind of like, wait, you'll
let everybody else do it.
You let everybody else do it. You run 10 commercials within the first 30 minutes, but if a player or anybody close to them does it, it's like banned for life. It's one of those tricky things. Like something's going to have to give because you're starting to hear it more and more. You know, in baseball, they're dealing with it right now.
Every sport's dealing with it.
That big Otani, you know, they're trying to cover that up because Otani's he's the face of the league, and his best friend was stealing money from him to place bets. Okay, yeah. Okay, something's fishy. Yes. And then in the NBA, see the player from Toronto. Yeah, he's betting on him. Like, just stupid bets. Like, the dumbest thing. Like, it's definitely
like, with how big, you know, sports gambling is, like, I don't have an issue with it at all. I mean, if you do it, you do it. You don't. Just obviously be smart. Don't put your final eggs in in the basket thing, and that's gonna, you know, hit for you because the house always wins. That's why they're, you know, making so much money. They're winning, you know, more times than not. So I think everybody just needs to be smart when it comes to it. Like I said, I'm not necessarily better. Like I definitely think it brings a little bit more interest into the game because obviously you're gonna have, if you have money on it, it's coming down to the wire where this guy gets a couple more yards, whether they score a touchdown, has you on the edge of your seat, get a little bit of that, you know, adrenaline, maybe like you're playing the game. So I can see it, you know, from when it comes to that, but there's always going to have some trickle effect and some leakage into the players, you know, actually doing it, you know, unfortunately. And we're going to continue to see more players that are doing it or that are going to do it, thinking they can sweep it under the rug, whether, you know, it's their friends betting for them or yada, 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 however,
family members,
however you may see it, there's always going to be that, you know, whether there's, you know, sanctions on it or whether it's, I don't know. People are going to find a way to bend the rules always.
Yeah. What do you think about how college football is nowadays with the NIL? Like, are you like, damn, I wish I was in college right now. Damn, I missed out on my opportunity.
I'm definitely like, damn, but it's good for these kids. So they get to capitalize on their image and likeness. I just hope that they're being smart with it. I mean, I couldn't imagine, you know, having, I mean, 10 grand in my pocket.
18 years old, you're a 5-star quarterback. Yeah. All right, here's $3 million a season. I think it's a season. Maybe not. Yeah, maybe
some of these guys are probably making that.
I thought it was for a season. Like, I mean, it was funny. Like last year in the Super Bowl, you got the San Francisco 49ers, you got
Brock Purdy.
What was there were like 10 quarterbacks in the college getting paid more than Brock Purdy, and he's playing in the Super Bowl. The backup for Texas Longhorns, Arch Manning, is getting paid more than Brock Purdy. He's a backup, and he's getting paid more.
It's an interesting dynamic. Wild. I just hope that the guys are obviously being smart with their money, and I hope that there's not a sense of entitlement, you know, when it comes to that, because
I mean, come on, James, I know. You're 18, what are they, you're young and dumb and full of something else, and now you got money.
The thing is, like, some of these guys, they're going to be making more money, you know, in college than what they will be making, like, in their rookie contracts, you know, when they go to the league, so, like, will the motivation still be there, will the drive still be there for you to go out there and want to, you know, be great. I mean, you don't have to want to go to the NFL. If you make a ton of money in college and you don't want to play football ever again, that's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But, like, if you actually do step foot in there, I hope that these guys are still, you know, putting their best foot forward. But I know now the universities are potentially going to be paying the players with the anti, you know, settlement, whatever that came out with the NCAA. You know, it won't just be NIL deals. Mm-hmm. Actual schools will have, like, some sort of salary cap where they can pay them, which that'll make it even more interesting to see. But there definitely needs to be some type of structure when it comes to it.
Yeah, because right now it's the wild, wild west. It's like the rich are going to just get richer.
Yep.
And every year it's going to be, if you're a player, you're like, I'm going to play here for a year. Yeah. And then
I'll play all 4 years.
Whoever wants me next year, I'll go there. And then after that, whoever wants me more, it's all about the money. You're going to get a guy who's going to be like three different schools in three different years, whoever pays him the most. Like,
Some sort of structure. I think they need some type of, you know, union or PA, whatever it may be, to, you know, counsel, you know, these players and whatever these, you know, contracts that they're supposedly signing, they can send them for review. Everybody knows what everybody's signing, so that way it's, you know, no mystery out there that this guy's supposedly getting $3 million here. He got $200K from Iowa from his official visit. They thought he was going to commit and this and that. Like, it just needs to be some sort of structure when it comes to.
What do you You got to be excited about the upcoming college season, right? You got the new Big Ten, the new SEC. You got Oregon, you got USC coming. You got
a ton of these. Oh, Washington as well.
Washington coming.
It's gonna be different. I mean, the entire landscape of college football. I mean, eventually it's gonna be one big conference.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna ask you. Like, do you think it's just gonna be one league and just like the SEC, Big Ten are gonna combine, and then they're gonna add couple of teams from the ACC, the obviously Notre Dame,
Florida States or Miami's and North Carolina. They'll trickle be like the top 50 schools. They're going to be in their own, you know, little conference. And then
I guess it could be almost an NFC, AFC type in college, right? And it's like its own league. It's where it's not even technically part of the other sports, like college baseball, college basketball. It's like its own thing. I see it going that way for sure.
Yeah, I definitely see it going that way. This year is going to be fun. It's going to be I don't think there's going to be any undefeated teams this upcoming year. So with all these,
I don't know. I'm gonna stop right there. Hook them. I think my Longhorns are gonna.
They go undefeated. I mean, they're gonna be good, man. Texas, they got some long money over there.
Listen. We got one. Okay, I know there's more hard teams that we're gonna play, but one team we got to get by, and that's Georgia, and we got them at home. Yeah. All right, we got them at home. Michigan, I don't know. They lost their coach. They lost a lot. They lost a lot of players. They lost their quarterback. Yeah, we got to go to the Big House. It's gonna be tough, but we'll do a favor for you guys. We'll show how you beat Michigan at home. Ohio State, you listen, you watching.
You guys went in the Tuscaloosa and won last year, so they should be riding confident, man. I know you guys lost some talent though. I mean, hopefully, you guys got some depth there.
We paid for some new talent.
Yeah, like I said, Texas has some long money in that university.
It's fun, man. I can't wait. I can't wait for college football season to start. I can't wait for the NFL season to start. It's the best time of the year, and I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, man. Well, James, dude, I appreciate you coming on my pod. Please let everybody know where we can find you. I know you got the Money Down podcast. Anything else? Your Instagram? What else are you working on?
Instagram, I'm at SweetFeet on X, Twitter, however you want to call them. I'm at SweetFeet underscore White. You know, and then I have my podcast. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. We're on, you know, Spotify, YouTube at the Money Down podcast. You can check us out. Have a ton of episodes out. You know, we've been enjoying ourselves. We're gonna have, you know, obviously more good content coming, more exclusive guests coming on, and we've just been enjoying ourselves. And you know, hopefully, I'll be on Big Ten Network again this upcoming season. You guys can check me out on there. Been enjoying myself, just really trying to, you know, immerse myself in this sports media. And I said, if it doesn't necessarily become TV, then hey, that's why I'm starting this podcast, so you guys can hear my voice as well as my host's voice. Like I said, we know the sport, and we also, you know, we talk life. We talk, you know, day-to-day stuff, whether it's, you know, mental health, just having fun, or whatever it may be.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, I look forward to it, man. Yeah, and hopefully I can catch you on the Big Ten. And, yeah, dude, I appreciate it. So thank you, everybody, for watching. We'll see you on the next episode.